It's Tuesday, June 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams reporting from Washington. Coming up, China races to find survivors of a ferry accident.
The weather conditions last night on Monday evening were really bad when the incident occurred.
China launches its new anti-smoking policy, and a coffee shop in Denver changes lives. It's all ahead. Rescue crews in central China continued Tuesday searching for survivors after a passenger ship carrying 450 people sank during a storm in the Yangtze River. The vessel was headed from Nanjing to Chongqing City in southwest China when it sank quickly during what were described as a tornado. The Xinhua News Agency says only 15 people have been rescued and 5 bodies recovered so far. Heavy winds and rain are hampering efforts to find others. 3 bodies were recovered downriver in Hunan province, about 50 kilometers from the location of the shipwreck, according to the People's Daily. Many of the passengers are believed to be trapped inside. More than 1,000 troops and 48 vessels are involved in the rescue operation, according to the People's Daily. I spoke with VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide about the accident. What is known about this accident, about what happened?
Well, at this point, we're still trying to figure out what actually happened. An investigation is ongoing. But what we've heard up to this point is that the weather conditions last night on Monday evening were really bad when the incident occurred. Both the captain and the chief engineer of the ship who survived, they made it out, and are among the few who have, at least have survived up to this point. They both said that there was a tornado that had knocked this passenger ship over. And earlier, there was state media confirmation of this, but just a moment ago, I was seeing another report that says that the Meteorological Administration here in China is maybe changing its stance on that. So we're a little bit in flux. What is clear, though, is that there were torrential rains, there were strong winds. Whether or not there was a tornado that may have had some part or played some part in this yet, I think is we're still trying to figure that out.
What kind of a rescue operation is underway at the site?
Well, they have a massive operation ongoing, about 40-some boats above water and dozens of divers below trying to work and get in underneath the ship. It's a very, from what we're hearing, it's a very difficult operation. We've just had, heavy rains. The Yangtze River, of course, is not, a very clear river in the first place, but with the rains, that's made things even murkier. We're hearing that it's very difficult to see. And on top of the hull, which is really, there's only a small portion of the hull that's above water. The rest of the ship is below water. And they've been working on the top of that using hammers and pounding in different places to try and locate insider those who might be stuck inside and still alive. And they're not really communicating by voice, but they're trying to get those who are inside and still alive to tap in response. And they've been through that. They've been able to pull a few of the passengers out of the ship.
Has the Chinese government commented on this accident?
Well, from the get-go in the morning, there was a very aggressive effort by the government to show that they were on top of this, that they were doing everything that they could in their power to make sure that anybody who was still alive could, they were making every effort to save them. And, of course, there's going to be follow-up measures in relation to safety and other things as we learn more about what actually went wrong. But they've really put on a very brave show. You know, they want to show that they're in control. This is probably the biggest accident that the Xi administration has had to deal with so far, so that they want to, let the public know that they're on top of things and in control, and they're they can, and that's really a lot of what the reporting today has been that, you know, it's about showing Li Keqiang, Premier Li Keqiang, on a airplane heading down. He's there at the site, and you know, how he was meeting with officials, you know, setting up task forces, and you know, giving different orders. He's China's firefighter, and he was in full form today.
That's VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide. Relatives of the missing waited anxiously to hear news about their loved ones and demanded answers on the seemingly slow pace of the rescue effort. Chen Guofu has five family members on the ship. He said this morning we saw online that a boat had flipped over. It happened at 11 p.m. last night. We tried to contact our families first. We called all of them, but nobody answered. China state broadcaster CCTV reported that the ship is owned by the Chongqing Eastern Shipping Corporation, which runs tours in the region of the Three Gorges Dam. Well, joining me here in the studio is web desk editor Andrew Polshevsky with a look at what's trending today. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, the big story trending today is Caitlyn Jenner. Now, Bruce Jenner, who is an Olympic athlete here in the U.S., very famous gold medal winner, announced to journalist Diane Sawyer last month that he was transitioning and becoming a woman. Now, she, Caitlyn Jenner, has announced her new name, and it's going to be on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine, and they released that cover on social media. And there's been a series of things that have happened in the last 24 hours in social media as a result of this. Caitlyn Jenner has joined Twitter, and as a result has become now the fastest person ever to get to 1 million followers on Twitter. Actually, President Obama had set the record a few weeks ago with @POTUS, we talked about on the show.
Yeah.
Caitlyn Jenner has now beaten that record, getting 1 million followers in just about 4 hours.
So wow, that's
an amazing,
impressive.
Amazing clip. In addition to that, the hashtag #CallMeCaitlyn, which is what the cover of the magazine says with the picture of Jenner, that hashtag has gone all over the world as a trending topic. And then we have celebrities who are tweeting their support. Everyone from Tyra Banks, the model, Ellen DeGeneres, the comedian and TV host, musician Boy George, actress Mia Farrow, tons and tons of support for Jenner as she announces this transition. So that's been a big story here in the U.S., big story on social media. I want to touch on two other stories, international stories and political stories. The first, Jacques Parizeau, is the former Quebec premier, almost led Quebec to independence in the 1995 vote. He passed away last night. And what's interesting about this is not only that it's trending on social media, but it was actually announced on Facebook, his passing. So it just shows that social media has become a tool not just to talk about these kind of things, but make these announcements as well.
Yes.
And then the UK, another sad passing, Charles Kennedy, who was the former Liberal Democrat leader, he passed away suddenly at 55. And what's trending on social media is not just Kennedy's passing, but comments from Alex Salmond, who is the former Scottish National Party leader. He said that Kennedy's heart wasn't in the vote last year for Scottish independence, kind of putting his foot in his mouth there. People are jumping on him on social media, calling it distasteful, denouncing his comments. So it goes to show again that social media, when people make these comments, make these announcements, people can jump on those, and especially if you say something without thinking, it can cause a lot of problems.
And it's also, it's instant, too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, within hours of him making these comments, it's all over the world, and it's one of the top trending topics on Twitter this morning.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's web desk editor Andrew Polshevsky.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. This may put a bit of a dent in the ego of our male listeners, but did you know that certain female animals living in captivity, such as birds, reptiles, and sharks, have been known to reproduce without any help whatsoever from a male mate? Years ago, scientists found that the offspring produced without any male intervention were the result of an asexual reproductive process called parthenogenesis, or virgin birth. Until now, scientists weren't sure if this form of reproduction was possible with animals that lived in the wild. But now a team of researchers say they have found the first evidence that this form of asexual reproduction indeed does take place with vertebrate animals in the wild. The scientists say that their research shows that around 3% of a species of fish called sawfish living in an estuary in Florida were born as the result of the parthenogenesis form of reproduction. And that's your science in a minute.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. The USA Rugby Men's Sevens team is trying to reach another milestone this month by qualifying for the 2016 Olympics after winning its first ever Sevens World Series tournament in London on May 17th. The Rio Summer Games will mark rugby's first appearance in the Olympics since 1924, when the U.S. men won a gold medal in the 15-a-side version of the sport. The U.S. men's 7-a-side team can get a chance to try to emulate that historic achievement by winning a North America and Caribbean Olympic pre-qualification tournament in the U.S. state of North Carolina on June 13th and 14th. In that event, the Eagles, as the U.S. men's sevens players are known, are likely to face a final matchup against Canada, the region's only other highly ranked team. Canada was one of several traditional rugby powers whom the Eagles beat convincingly at London's Twickenham Stadium last month on the way to winning their maiden sevens World Series Cup.
Here are the headlines. Rescue crews in central China continued Tuesday searching for survivors after a passenger ship carrying 450 people sank during a storm in the Yangtze River. The Xinhua News Agency says only 15 people have been rescued and 5 bodies recovered so far. The cause of that accident is not clear. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said Tuesday that pro-government forces are not getting enough support from an international coalition helping Iraq battle Islamic State militants. He spoke in Paris before meeting with coalition foreign ministers to discuss strategy after the militant group's recent gains. Witnesses in the northeastern Nigerian city of Maiduguri say Boko Haram has staged a new attack on the city. It's slated to be the new base of operations for the government's efforts to crush the militant group. Reports from the city say rocket-propelled grenades were used in Tuesday's attack. You're listening to VOA News.
This is International Edition. Coming up, we'll hear how a coffee shop is changing lives. China is stepping up its efforts to curtail smoking. On Monday, Beijing initiated a fine on those who decide to smoke outdoors. This comes as a program based in the U.S. state of Georgia expands. VOA's Ira Melman talked with Pam Redman, who heads a project called the China Tobacco Control Project. Initially funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the program, based at Georgia State University's School of Public Health, focuses on a group of Chinese cities whose leaders have shown a willingness to support tobacco control efforts. Another grant has now enabled the project to expand to 5 more Chinese cities.
What we do is we partner with the cities, provide them technical support and a small amount of funding to establish comprehensive, effective, and sustainable tobacco control programs.
Pam, why China? People smoke elsewhere too, don't they?
We are asked that all the time. And China is truly the epicenter of the global tobacco epidemic. China grows more tobacco. They produce more cigarettes, and they have more smokers than any other country in the world. And to compare it to the U.S., there are more smokers in China than there are people in the U.S. There's over 300 million smokers today in China. So when you really think about it, you know, smoking is the single most preventable cause of death in the world. There are a lot of positive things happening, but there is so much more work to be done because there are still so many smokers there. There are still so many people that are exposed to secondhand smoke every day in the workplace and in the homes.
Now, you've just added a number of pretty large cities. People who don't know China don't know that some of the cities that are not the largest in China are larger than most cities around the rest of the world. So just go over that a little bit about who's being added, why, and when.
We are adding 5 new cities. And we're actually getting ready to launch this program, and all the mayors will be there in the city of Xi'an. Xi'an is one of our cities. Xiamen is another. Wuhan, Chengdu, and Chongqing. And Chongqing, just to mention Chongqing, that's 30 million people. So when you think about impact, the impact of smoke-free policies in public places in a city with 30 million people, that's huge. You know, that has the potential for huge impact.
There was another question I had, and it dealt with where you guys are located in the state of Georgia. For people around the world, Georgia at least is on the southern end of what was the tobacco belt. Why are you guys located there?
That is true. why are we located here? I don't even know how to explain that. This is home. But you're right. We understand this firsthand. The ones of us working on this project, we've been working in tobacco control for a number of years. And when we think about China is where we were back in the 70s and the 80s in terms of smoking prevalence. You know, it hasn't been that long ago that, you could smoke in public places here in the U.S., and men and women, were smoking, 40% of the population, over 40% of the population was smoking. So it hasn't been that many years ago. But the thing with China is, they can't wait 40 years for this change because the public health impact is going to be too great.
Pam Redman heads a project called the China Tobacco Control Project. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Homeless young adults in Denver, Colorado are given a second chance through a coffee shop that hires those making a transition from a life on the streets into their own homes. One of the employees talked with Paula Vargas about how Purple Door Coffee Shop is helping him make the transition.
Welcome. What can I get started for you guys?
For a quarter of his life, Kevin Person lived on the street. Today, he's working behind the counter of an espresso bar, serving coffee, and working to transition off the streets and into a home.
It's a struggle to get a job even when you have a house nowadays. But when you don't have a house, trying to get a job is so much harder.
It's made a little easier in Denver because of Purple Door Coffee. It does not just serve a cup of Java. It turns lives around. The owners of the two-year-old nonprofit hire 3 to 4 young adults per year, reaching out to shelters like Urban Peak, where Kevin was staying, for recommendations of those ready to commit to working. Kim Easton, who runs Urban Peak, says the partnership is vital to the struggling community.
When someone has lived in chronic stress and trauma for as long as these young people have, every day fighting for survival, they haven't had the opportunity nor the example of how to learn conflict management, how to manage money, how to cook a meal, how to pay their rent on time, nor do they understand even why that's important.
It's exactly what employment at Purple Door offers. Co-founder Madison Chandler and her partner meet with their workers individually each week to talk about 52 topics, from mental health and customer service to providing a life coach to ensure they have the support and skills that will set them up for success.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there's the teaching about things ranging from hygiene to budgeting to credit score to how to do laundry, things like that.
Chandler says at the end of Purple Door's first year, their 4 graduates were ready to start a new chapter in their lives, and the program helped them get jobs.
Our very first guy that ever graduated from the program, he's been working at an auto parts warehouse, since he left, which has been over a year now.
Kevin recognizes that he is being given the tools to leave behind the struggles of homelessness and learn the skills needed to live a life full of color.
They seem to have the philosophy that they don't want to change us, they want to help us change ourselves.
For the first time in his life, Kevin, who says he is used to being kicked out of stores and treated with disrespect, is being trusted with money, handling food, and enjoying conversations with customers.
How are you doing today? Doing very well. I love your purse. That is
in the short time Kevin has been in the program, he says it's already given him the support, love, and opportunity he and many others without homes need but denied.
It's been so helpful just to have structure and to have, like, a purpose and a goal that's, like, tangible.
Denver is one of the 10 fastest-growing cities in the United States. It is also one of the top 10 major cities in numbers of its homeless. An official census on one night in January last year counted 5,812 men, women, and children staying in the city shelters or on the street. More than 500 were young adults on their own, like Kevin. For Chandler, providing these young adults with employment and education and helping them become confident and independent is the most rewarding part of her job.
Watching somebody start to believe in themselves and to believe that they can achieve a life for themselves that they have dreamed of, or to believe that they're worth it, even.
For Kevin, who is turning 25 this month, living off the streets, in a home and having a job to come to will be the best gift he can give himself. For VOA News, Paula Vargas in Denver.
And is this for here or to go?
That's our show. If you'd like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs, are chronic disabling illnesses that thrive in areas with poor sanitation, lack of clean drinking water, and scant access to medication. The World Health Organization has identified 17 of them as priorities for action. Some of them can be effectively treated and even eliminated with low-cost medications, in many cases donated by pharmaceutical companies. Getting these medications to where they are needed has been a daunting task, since these are diseases of the poorest of the poor. Their impact on individuals and communities can be devastating. NTDs impair intellectual development in children and reduce school enrollment. They limit the ability of infected individuals to work and thrive, thus trapping them in a cycle of poverty and disease. Today, over 1 billion people suffer from at least one NTD. In 2006, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, started a program addressing the seven diseases that comprise 80% of all NTDs: lymphatic filariasis, blinding trachoma, onchocerciasis, schistosomiasis, and the three most common infections, the soil-transmitted parasites hookworm, roundworm, and whipworm. Back then, the program had a budget of $15 million to distribute 36 million treatments to 16 million people in four countries, said USAID Assistant Administrator Ariel Pablos Mendez. Today, it's $100 million and 240 million treatments distributed to 115 million people in 31 countries. The program is very successful for three reasons. First is USAID's partnership with the pharmaceutical sector, which has to date contributed $8.8 billion worth of medication. Second is USAID's partnership and coordination with the government of the United Kingdom's Department for International Development, which has allowed for a collective reach to almost 50 countries and the provision of 340 million treatments in 2014. And third, USAID's cooperation with host governments and the ability to build upon the existing infrastructure of national disease control and elimination programs. The elimination of these diseases of extreme poverty as a public health scourge is within our grasp, said USAID Assistant Administrator Pablos Mendez. USAID is committed to working with countries and our global partners to reach the remaining 800 million people who still need treatment.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.